Well, it's that time of the week again. It's your favorite hockey podcast on the dial, Hockey, the podcast with myself, Derek Alberts, and as always, my co-host, Tyron Jabu-Barnard. How you doing, Ty?
Yeah, Derek, great. Thanks, and yourself. Always good to be back here. Always good to be chatting hockey. And, of course, now in our regular time slot, Tuesday mornings, brought to you straight. Obviously, we're not recording on a Tuesday morning, but you'll be listening to this on a Tuesday morning, brought straight to your airwaves every Tuesday. I mean, you can put it in the diary, you can set it as an appointment, and have the sweet melodic tones of Derek Alberts and Tyron Jabu-Barnard filling your airwaves so early in the morning.
Sweet melodic tones. I like that. Yeah, no doubt about it. Tuesdays are the best days if you're a massive hockey fan, particularly if you're a massive hockey fan in South Africa. We bring you the best of the best as far as guests are concerned. We've had some stellar names in the past, and we continue to bring them every week to your earlobes. I'm not even going to go into biology and the rest. But Ty, tell us, who is on the cards today?
Well, we are fortunate today. We are continuing a little bit of a theme that we've had in recent weeks with completing the brother sets. When we had John Wright and Peter Wright. And of course, we cheated and had Lindsay Wright as well. But in one of our very early episodes, we interviewed a young man named Bile Ntuli. And today we are honored to interview a man who is here fully on his own accord, the one and only Sihle Sigs Ntuli.
Sihle, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. Been looking forward to this. I was actually, as Tyron's mentioned, I know my brother was on call a couple of weeks, if not months back now. So I was waiting for my turn. So thanks for the invite and looking forward to spending the next couple of minutes with you, Jen.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure. A couple of minutes. I don't think, I hope you haven't made any plans for the next hour or so, because it's certainly not going to be a couple of minutes. But yeah,
it's cleared the day.
Oh, excellent. I'm very glad to hear, because we usually have these things going for about 4 or 5 hours. So yeah, it's a long stretch. As we, the first hour, we'll deal with the first 3 or 4 years of your life, and then we'll move on from there.
Sounds like my team talk, so I'm all in.
Well, I mean, listen, we have to start in the most obvious place, and that's in the lockdown. Obviously, not long ago, you moved up from Durban to Pretoria to head up Tux University's hockey program, to head up the first team there. Obviously, the lockdown has been a little bit of a blow to you. So what has happened to you during lockdown, and where are you now?
Yeah, such a disappointing time, I think, isn't it, for everyone? But you correct, Ty. I made the move up to Pretoria beginning of 2019. So this is my second year up north. Loving it, really, really enjoying the move. Found myself in a great environment and the setup and the players that I have the opportunity to work with has really, really been awesome and exciting. This year, 2020, the plans were really busy, and we were in for quite a busy schedule with the men's group. A lot of our players are involved with some of the national teams as well. So the Olympics were on the cards for some of our senior players. Some of our junior players in the club are part of the under-21 age group, so they had African qualifiers. It was a busy year. Varsity hockey was back on the cards. So unfortunately, all that has been put on hold for a bit with all the postponements under this lockdown. So yeah, currently, as a squad, we've all gone back. We all at home. I've originally been from Durban. I'm back in Durban at the moment. I've been here for a couple of weeks. But the plan is to get back up to Pretoria in the next 2 or 3 weeks, with the return to train protocol being approved recently. So hopefully, in the next week or two, we're able to get back onto the pitch and start some sort of routine with stick and ball.
And well, I mean, when you say that, you know, get the return to training, but I mean, what competitive action are you expecting for Tux and, even further than that, for the under-21s this year?
Yeah, that's the sad part of it all. To be honest, a lot of the competitions have been cancelled for 2020. So this year, for a lot of you guys that know about varsity hockey, obviously with the men and ladies at varsity hockey, it alternates every second year. So this year was the men's turn, which was back in May. That has been cancelled for the year. Under 21 RPT, which is part of our process in terms of selecting and putting a team together for the national under 21 team, has been cancelled this year. Leagues across the country have been cancelled. So this is all competition that unfortunately in 2020 has fallen through. The last one we are hoping for to hear feedback on is senior RPT, which is as it stands still on the cards for August. So that would be the last form of competition, really, that if we were fortunate to get it in 2020, yeah, we'd still get that. But at the moment, everything's been cancelled until 2021. So all the work that's currently happening now is all planning and preparing for 2021 now, which is a pity for some of our players, because from a varsity setup, some of them are final year students. So, you know, this was their last year, hopefully. So they miss out on that final year of competition at varsity level. Some of our under 21 players in the national setup, fortunately, we've been granted, so next year's African qualifiers leading up to the Junior World Cup in end of next year has actually been, changed to an under 22 tournament. So our current under 21s who would have been in their final year this year, fortunately, will still get the opportunity to take part in that tournament next year.
That's amazing foresight, and I'm glad to hear something along those lines, because I think to myself, if there's any teams that have been the most affected by the current scourge of COVID-19, it's the age group level teams, particularly the ones that are coming to the end of certain years, which, depending on how well they do, will mean their qualifications for the next team or where they go to from here. I mean, it's a complete write-off. And I'm sure as an under 21 coach or someone that manages the younger sides, it must be incredibly frustrating to see a year just disappear like that.
Yeah, Derek, that's exactly it. I think, you know, for me, the lockdowns affected everyone. You know, we all facing our own different challenges. But I look at schoolboy hockey at junior age group, and as you say, basically just age group sport in general, and to see this year just being taken away from a lot of players is sad. But as you say, I'm very excited to see that African hockey has looked ahead and made sure that next year's tournament still allows the current group who unfortunately would have missed out to take part. Now the situation and the decisions fall back onto us as the coaching staff with the selection panel in terms of how now the dynamic of the team definitely has to be relooked at, because now with the tournament moving to next year, the gap between that African qualifier and the actual Junior World Cup becomes shorter. So it's decisions we need to make in terms of how much we looking at disrupting the team with those under 22s moving on after the tournament next year and so on. So it's a tricky time, but I'm really, really happy for those players that will fortunately be able to still be part of the setup, which had started already. So for us to just have had to exclude them because of the pandemic would have really been sad.
Yeah, it's really good news, and I'm really chuffed to hear. And I mean, you mentioned the word disruptions, and I suppose if they can get over a year like this, next year will be a cakewalk in terms of the minuscule amount of times between qualifying and tournaments, etc. I mean, that's small fry compared to missing an entire year and having to sit back and twiddle your thumbs and say, think of what could have been.
Absolutely. Tough. That's, Derek, so that's exactly what we've been actually saying on our weekly chats. And I've been trying to keep the guys positive, and we've all gone through experiences where in hindsight, when you look back at them, you go, you know what I'm going through now is actually not so bad. I've been through worse. And that's really, as a coaching staff, something we've been trying to drive into the players to say, as frustrating as everything is at the moment, which it is really. But I think when everything gets going next year and all the challenges and disruptions that we might possibly face, we've been through a more challenging time under this lockdown. Yeah, definitely.
Sorry, I was accidentally on mute there. I'm busy having a conversation with myself. Sigs, obviously you spent a lot of time coaching schoolboys, and you were talking about schoolboy now. Some great memories from your time at Kearsney, and some great traditions and stuff. But what's it been like, obviously, having your day-to-day involvement more now at a university level than a schoolboy? How's that change gone for you?
Yeah, very different. But I'll say for me, for the better, to be honest, I'd like to believe anyway, a big part of my coaching is about interacting with my players and really being hands-on with not just their hockey, but off the field and you know, just their personal lives, really. And I try to implement that approach at schoolboy level, which I thought I reached a very good balance. And I really do believe that my relationship with my players back at school was really strong through that effort. But, you know, at schoolboy hockey, there's always that dynamic. I was in there just as the hockey coach, not so much involved with the boys on a day-to-day 8 to 2 p.m. routine. So I'd just see the boys, you know, from 3 to 5 p.m., whatever the slot was, and then on a Saturday. So it was obviously always hard to build those personal, interpersonal relationships. Although, like, as I said earlier, I do think we were able to reach it. And so the comparison to now, university level and being up at Tux, it's very different. You know, I'm in the office from 9 to 4 p.m., so that people often ask, what do you guys do in the office? And I go, well, this is exactly it. You know, we're very open to our players coming in, chatting, sitting down, and just building those relationships. So I found that the move now has helped me personally to reach that balance that I've always tried to look for, and opened up more time on a daily basis to interact and just get to understand my players and for them to understand me as well. So I definitely am finding the environment at the moment much more conducive, I'd say, to my approach of coaching.
And what would you say is the major cultural difference between KZN hockey and Northern Gauteng, or even Gauteng hockey, that you've experienced?
Two stand out, you know, things that just straight away, as you move to a new province, you go, wow, okay, this is different. One, I'll honestly say, first of all, my upbringing and my background in KZN hockey was amazing, and I owe a lot of who I am, really, to KZN hockey and the mentors and people I had around me over my school days, playing days, and obviously up until my coaching days when I finished off with the Raiders group. But I must say that the environment up in Pretoria at times that I found has been a very professional setup, which I guess at the end of the day, we all chasing as a code in South Africa, just trying to professionalize our sport. And I found that the support and the backing from management, you know, the facilities that I have at hand have allowed for the program to be run at a more professional, at a more daily routine, set routine than I was used to down in KZN. So that was my first experience seeing that and seeing the drive towards setting up a professional environment. And then the second one obviously has to be just the hockey. There's definitely differences. And I look across the whole country when back from our playing days till now as a coach. And I do have this belief that all of us in our different regions, provinces across the country play a different brand of hockey. And I've definitely experienced that. It was quite an exciting challenge, I must say. Starting off last year with my Tux group. And then subsequently to that, I was fortunate to coach the Northern under 21 side. But to try and impose my beliefs, my philosophy around the game, which a large part of it is obviously based off what I know back from KZN. So that's been an awesome challenge. And I think I've finally reached a place where we've been able to integrate both brands of hockey. To answer your question, so I think the differences are, what I was introduced to when I arrived there last year, is Northerns have more of a very direct, aggressive approach to the game on the field, where I'd say maybe the KZN setup is more structured and more patient in terms of how we went about the game. But it's been awesome trying to integrate those two philosophies and finding the balance.
Sikle, you mentioned mentors. Can you talk us through a bit more, expand a bit to who they would have been or are?
Yeah, still are. I played for, in my university days, I went to UKZN in Durban, and I played for a coach by the name of Brendan Carolyn, BC to most of us in the hockey circles. So he was my coach for 4 years, and I do believe that my passion towards, from playing towards coaching, definitely would have come through my relationship and interactions that I had with BC. So yeah, he's someone I still tap into now. He's based in Ireland. He's done some work with the senior Irish men's team. He does some consulting with some of the Asian team. So someone who's definitely still current, like I said, was my coach. But through him, I definitely developed the whole, you know, tactical appreciation to the game and just the whole professional approach to the game itself. So he's someone who he's my go-to guy. And then, yeah, more recently, I think I've had the opportunity to work with one of our previous national men's coaches, Fabian Gregory. And just I played for Fabian, and then in recent times, I was able to actually work with him in a coaching environment. And his work ethic, for me, was second to none. So those are two, I'd say, standout personalities that I've been able to, I believe, have kind of shaped the type of coach I am today. And fortunately, still able to call on them at any time. And then finally, I mean, someone I spent 5 years with at Kearsney College was Wayne Marsden. Wayne just more of a father figure, you know, in my youth, which I still am, so it's scary to say in my youth when I look back at things. But Wayne Marsden was someone who really was more of a father figure. In my younger days of coaching, I was getting a bit of trouble here and there, and I definitely received a lot of guidance in terms of how to approach and go about things around the hockey circles itself. So yeah, those three guys come to mind, and but I mean, listen, so many more. Adele Madsen, who I spent years with at Madsen Hockey Academy down in Kloof, down here in Durban, Charlie Pereira, and so on and so on, so many.
I can imagine, like, he's younger than you, but would your brother have maybe had some sort of effect on your lifestyle, on your career, on your hockey goals, etc.? I mean, granted, he'll definitely say that about you, but does it work the other way around?
It definitely does, Derek. I think and then I've had the pleasure to work with him in a lot of our domestic teams that we're involved with, whether it be provincial hockey, and now more recently, obviously being involved with him in the national setup. But of course, you know, there's so many things that I look at my brother, who is much younger than me. Bills is about 7 years younger than me. So to think that, I would look at his behaviors and certain ways that he goes about the game and learn from, some might think that's not the way it goes, but 100%. I mean, Bill, his drive and professionalism and determination, all the adjectives, I guess, that I can throw at him, inspire me and drive me as well to keep pushing and working really hard towards being successful at what we're doing. So yeah, I hope it works both ways. I know he said some nice things about me in the past, which is really awesome to hear. But it definitely goes both ways. There's behaviors that he goes about his hockey that I look at and I go, even in my coaching setup, I can implement these things and make it work.
Siggs, you mentioned that you've worked alongside your book now on the national things. Let's go through the national teams that you have coached and chat about each. So obviously you were the head coach of the SA Under-18 Hockey Fives and you went through to the African Cup of Nations. Let's first talk about the elation of going through to that tournament and winning it.
Yeah. What an experience. I must just start there. And then let me explain this experience. I've been, besides the national teams, every team I've been involved with, I've got memories that will live with me forever, and all for different reasons. And that under 85 team that we took to Algeria in 2018. You know, I get goosebumps just reflecting quickly back on that, because all these boys are now part of my under 21 setup. So even just that dynamic is really special to me already. But we went to Algeria, yeah, in an attempt to qualify for the Youth Olympics in Argentina later that year. And yeah, I mean, it was all, as I said, it's an Olympic cycle. You're building towards the Olympics, and we had good prep back in South Africa. We had our send-off ceremony in Joburg, where we were really, really treated professionally, in the whole send-off by SASPOC, you know. And then we arrived in Algeria, and I must be honest and say, if ever I've learned through a challenge of pushing through and putting your head down, and not getting the top hand, and the objective was Algeria. From our landing and the 2.5 to 3 weeks that we spent there was really, really difficult. And that's me being 100% honest. We stayed in what was meant to be the village. As we all know, all these games, you accommodated in villages. And it was far from any type of village we'd ever understood an Olympic or African qualified village to be like. So it was very challenging from that front. Our venue was about, on a daily basis, we were about spending about 2 to 2.5 hours on the bus one way. So that's about 5 to 6 hours on the bus daily just to the venue to train, or to obviously then when the tournament kicked off to play. And then obviously the weather, you know, the heat, but that comes with sport in general. But it was a very challenging journey, which was a learning point for me, because the one thing I definitely took away from that was just the mental strength and focus of that player group that we took with us. I still, to this day, have a huge amount of respect for those boys, because at stages, you know, as a coach, you're meant to be driving this whole, you know, put the external factors aside and let's focus on the goal, the task at hand. And at times, maybe I forgot that, and the boys were able to pull me back in direction. And so it was challenging on and off the field. But yeah, we were fortunate enough to sneak through in the final and win it. And then unfortunately, we didn't get the ticket. We got the ticket, but then coming back home, we weren't sent to the Olympics, which was a pity. But still an experience nonetheless.
Yeah, Sig, so let's talk about that reasoning quick. I mean, because many people, obviously, the hockey community obviously have a lot of distaste for SASCOC at times. But this one actually isn't a SASCOC ruling. This is an IOC ruling that says only one gender team can go for each country. And of course, the challenge that we have here in South Africa is that only our girls' hockey team qualifies.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the boys, so unfortunately, you're up against rugby sevens.
That was it. And I think, and I must give credit to SASCOC in that aspect, because everything before we left was very clear. So it wasn't like it was only when we returned, you know, when we told that, oh, by the way, this is the whole dynamic and you guys now don't get to go. We knew that, our ladies, or our girls at that time, had a very good chance because they were the only female team sport trying to qualify. So all they had to do, and they knew it, and we all knew it, and we were very, and we still today, very happy that the girls got that opportunity to travel after they qualified. But they knew that all they had to do was win their tournament, and they had the ticket. We knew, and it was a very, and knowing how strong our seven setup is in this country, we also were very honest in knowing that, listen, if they qualify, they most likely will be sent, because it would be giving two different codes an opportunity, knowing that our girls already would be going. It really, if we're honest, would only be fair to expose as many different codes to that opportunity, as opposed to sending two hockey teams, send one rugby team and one hockey team. So it's still disappointing and sad, but it wasn't a surprise. It was something that we had been briefed about before actually taking part in the qualifiers.
Yeah, and then of course your next level up, having coached the under-18s, you were recently appointed as the under-21 head coach. We know that Neville Rothman had stepped down, and many people had actually said that you probably should have got the role up front, being involved in the senior team. I will talk about that next. But what was that feeling like when you got formally appointed as the under 21 head coach?
Firstly, I must say that, initially, of course, it was disappointing for me that I originally didn't get the post. But I'd always said that I know Neville really well. I've worked with Neville, and I'd always said it, in my disappointment, I still did believe that he was good enough for the job. So either way, you know, the boys were getting someone who I did believe could do the job. So yeah, when he did then step down, and then I did get the call and formally get appointed, for me, the biggest drive to be part of this cycle now with under 21 group was just my history with this current group. I did, and I still do believe that I was the best candidate for it, but obviously, you know, the panel had their different views, and that's absolutely fine, and I respect that. But I've been part of, you know, I was the former 8 under 16 coach for 4 years. So if I look at our current squad of 45 boys now, I'll say 90%+ of that group has worked with me from under 16 through that five set up in under 18 and up until now. So my personal belief was that I did know that group better than anyone else. But that's, once again, that's just my opinion. So yeah, now to be formally working with them again, I realized that, you know, those relationships and that dynamic, as we've literally just hit the ground running. We got together for the first time in January. Obviously, they spent the whole of 2019 under Neville and his coaching staff. So coming in, one of my concerns was that, you know, African qualifiers are in 2020, and I felt that 2019 had been wasted, if I must be honest. But having worked with the boys now since the beginning of January, I do feel that our history, a large contingent of those boys are based in Gauteng, so I do get to work with them really on a regular basis. My previous history of being in KZN and the KZN group, a large part of the Western Cape players have come through, as I've said before, the under 16 age groups. So at the moment, things are going well. I'm excited. We've got a good thing going. We've got a good squad going. At the moment, under lockdown, we're meeting weekly, and it's really all positive at the moment. Obviously, we will have challenges along the way, and I think one of the biggest challenges will be leaving players out, because I've said this, and now the reason I did put my name forward for this job, because I do believe that this age group is one of the most talented age groups I've personally ever seen. So that was one of the reasons I was looking forward to working with them. So it will be very tough to select this team and leave players out and only go with 18, because I do think everyone that's in the squad, and possibly even players that aren't in the squad but in this age group, there's a lot of depth.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Neville. I've known Neville for years. We're all PE boys, and I was actually at school with his wife, Leah. So I've known them for many, many years. And he's just on the road from us now over at Uffy. So a massive change of scenery going from Stellenbosch to the heart of Pretoria. But and I'm glad you ended off speaking about one of the most incredibly talented groups of people that you've encountered in terms of the current squad. Because I always think whenever it comes to age group level sports, you always talk about certain generations, where this generation, you can see they're going to go far. And, I mean, you've already said half of it, but would you say this current generation that you're currently overseeing, they're right up there with the best that you have encountered?
For me, absolutely, Derek. And honestly, that's all, as I said earlier, 2019 was a bit difficult for them, in terms of results. Tyron would know, you know, they were part of the whole PHL, tournament, and they really struggled with the results. They then improved. They did much better when they went across to senior RPT towards the end of 2019. So already you could see the progress. But those results put a dent in their confidence, and you could see it as an outsider, as someone who was coaching against them last year. You could just tell by their body language that there was a lot of doubt within their environment, and a large part of our work with them so far this year has just been to to get them to realize once again the potential they have within their squad. But yeah, Derek, to answer your question, for me, in my short experience, they're definitely up there with possibly Gareth Ewing's 2016 age group. That would be, yeah, my brother and them, Matt D'Souza, that age group. So Ryan Crowes, all those boys. So for me, in my recent coaching history and playing, yeah, really, and without putting any pressure on them and ourselves as the coaching staff, but if I compare them to the previous two or three cycles, they're special. They really are.
I'm Cindy Hack, captain of the South African women's indoor hockey team, and you are listening to Hockey the Podcast by Raider Media.
You're obviously an assistant coach to Gareth Ewing. You're involved with Mark Hopkins as well. And a lot of those youngsters that you're talking about are coming through and being part of the squad. I mean, firstly, let's talk about the day you first get selected to the national team as an assistant coach. I mean, what is that moment like for you?
Yeah. I must be honest. I've always felt, Tar, that a lot of things with my coaching, I've always felt that when that opportunity came, it was too soon for me. And that's the honest truth. And hence why, you know, people close around me, the mentors that I spoke about earlier, a lot of these decisions I've had to run by them, you know, when opportunity has come up. And I'll go back and I'll compare it to when I first got asked to coach the Raiders team in 2015. I thought, wow, I'm not ready for this. And running these conversations and through people close to me who believe me and I guess reminded me of who I am and what I've done and the fact that I can do this has helped. But going back to the call, Mark Hopkins, yeah, phoned me in mid-2018. So this was also another tricky bit for me because, you know, I felt that the time frame and the timeline towards up to 2018 was a very busy year and very important year with the World Cup at the end of it. And I just thought, wow, to come into a team 5-6 months away from such an important tournament is probably a bit too much. But yeah, chatting to people that are close around me, having that chat with Mark Hopkins himself as the coach, and what he wanted from me in my role made things a lot clearer. But in terms of a feeling, absolutely no better feeling to know that, you know, our highest and most senior team, I can add, or I've been asked to add some sort of value to driving us in a successful direction, whether that happens or not. But it's just an honor because obviously someone out there believes that you add value and you can potentially add value at the highest level to make our national team better. So I'll always be grateful to Mark Hopkins for that phone call. And yeah, since then it's just been an awesome journey, continuous learning and continuous sharing between myself and the players and obviously the other staff that I've got the opportunity to work with.
And of course, you then got to work with Gareth Ewing, and it's just over a year ago that probably was one of the coolest experiences in the past, maybe almost decade for the SA Hockey men, over in a country that you're already starting to know very well, in India, where end-to-end pass of the field, a move started by Nick Spooner through Billy, through Owen and Vimby, and finished by Nick Spooner. Firstly, we've asked Gareth this question, but do you remember the emotion of that and how big a celebration was that knowing then?
The significance of that,
Yeah, absolutely.
Tyron, that goosebumps right now, because for me, it really was. And it is, for me, it's the moment of hockey ever in my whole life, because it was the goal, it was the game to put us one step away from obviously qualifying for the Olympics. And if I had to compare the two tournaments, that series in India and then later on in the year going to Stellenbosch for the African qualifiers, and if I had to say which route was more difficult, and if I'm being honest, I'd say India route was tougher. you know. Not saying Africa was tough in its own way later on in the year, but if I quickly compare, that was my second time in India, and obviously after the World Cup in 2018. And in 2018, the rules were different, firstly, in terms of the personnel from the coaching staff that we are allowed to be on the bench with the head coach. So no assistant coaches were allowed on the bench with the head coach in 2018. So one of my roles was to look after our penalty corners in the 2018 cycle for the World Cup. So I was always positioned in the stands behind the goals with the crowd, which was also an experience in its own, an awesome experience, to be honest. But I was never with the team on the field at the World Cup. And then, yeah, fast forward 5-6 months later, the rules changed. And Gareth had asked me to spend the games with him on the bench. So already that was a massive experience. But that goal and that action, as you say, happened obviously directly in front of me on the touchline. And all those actions, and it's funny you say that, because I actually shared this clip with my under 21 group a week ago, I think it was. As I said, for me, it's the most significant, the most crazy 30 seconds of my hockey experience, and all those actions when Nick Spooner hit that ball through to Owen. I must be honest, I don't think Spoons hits the ball really cleanly. You know, he's one of the better technical players we have in the group, but he mishit that ball, and it was a bouncing ball, a horrible ball for Owen to pick up. And Owen somehow, and he would be the first one to admit it, out of 10, he probably would miss track 9 of those receives, but he picked that receiver. And so all this is happening moment by moment, you know, and then Owen finally picks that ball up, and then he turns around and rolls some rubbish ball behind his back, and he knows that as well. And Bills is able to jump off his feet, and we all don't know how he stopped it and picked it up and somehow scramble a shot away. And Spooner has come through, as you said earlier, 50, 60 meters up the pitch, and he's the highest person on the field. So just magical moment. Honestly, if I look at how we qualified for the Olympics, that is the moment that I always refer back to and go, if that 20, 30 seconds didn't happen, it would be a totally different story. And keep in mind, 3-4 minutes earlier in that game, the US had missed a tip-in on the far post, open, non-marked player, and it hit his foot, you know, and we should have gone 2-1 down, and that's a totally different dynamic to the game. But he missed that, and 3 minutes later, yeah, the rest is history, as they say.
What was the date of that game again? Can you gents remember?
Oh, it's literally, as Tyron said, was literally exactly a year ago. So it would have been...
It was around the 16th. It was around the 16th of June last year.
16th of June. Okay. Yeah. I'm just trying to find that voice note again, Ty. It's got to be on some year. So what happened was Ty and I had been obviously following the game on TV.
Yeah.
We weren't together though, so we were just commenting to each other nonstop on WhatsApp. And as soon as that goal went in, I got a voice note from Ty celebrating the achievement. And rightly so, it was a phenomenal effort. But we have played it on the show a couple of times, but it never gets old. But I will find it just now. But I mean, you've had a lot of highlights. You mentioned that, but from a personal point of view, looking at the PHL and your record with the Drakensberg Dragons.
That's a special team, that, Derek. And only because we've gone through everything together, you know. And I always say to the guys now when we talk about it, everything is funnier in hindsight. It's not funny in the moment when things are going wrong and challenging. But I started the first year of PHL in 2016. I was very, once again, fortunate to be given the opportunity to coach the Dragons. And I honestly believed that, and throughout all the 4 years, I've always believed that we've been able to put together one of the better teams in terms of personnel and selecting it at the draft and putting it together. So we went into 2016 very confident. I was very confident of my group, and we played really good hockey. We really, really played good hockey, and the stats prove that. You know, when we always look back at our game, we had more possession, we had more shots on goal, we had more penalty corners, but we didn't score the goals. And I guess at the end of the day, that's where the results go. You have to score the goals. So we came last, stone last in 2016, and we finished sixth. And then that hurt a lot. But then, we came back in 2017, and all of a sudden our performances were backed by the results, and we were able to push on and get into a final. So from finishing last the year before to then getting into the final in 2017 was, in its own way, disappointing to lose the final, of course, but a massive improvement. And then, yeah, and then 2018, 19 has also just been magical to be able to win the two tournaments. But like I say, it's a chuckle now. It's a bit funny when I look back at 2016 and think how badly we did results-wise to where we are and the type of group we are now. But we've also been lucky. We've been able to keep, well, not, I wouldn't say lucky, but it's worked really well for us, and we've been able to keep a good core of our squad. I think if I look across all the PHL franchises, we've definitely been very consistent with our personnel, and we've become a team, which is very challenging for PHL because obviously you don't spend a lot of time together. So I look at a large core of our squad, and we've been together 4 years now, so that helps as well.
Ziggs, and obviously this year's PHL is not officially been called off yet, but it is in all likelihood not going to happen this year.
I'm not
sure how much I'm allowed to say or stuff on that.
I'm with you, sir.
But now being involved with the under-21s, obviously you will be seconded to the Golden Gate Gladiators should the current model play out. I mean, how would that feel playing against the Dragons and taking on your old team with a new one?
Yeah, I've thought about this at length, and I know that my Dragons players have thought about it as well, and I think we both have the same approach to it. So they're so excited to play against now the Gladiators that's going to be coached by me, and they cannot wait to obviously get the results against us and beat us, and vice versa. And I cannot wait to do the same thing. But I am looking forward to it. It is sad. Let me just stop by saying that. It is sad to move on from the Dragons. As I said just now, I've spent 4 years with them, and we've been really consistent with our personnel. So we have become a real team. But a job has to be done, and this is sport. People move on, and I'm looking forward now to working, as I said earlier, with this under-21 side known as the Gladiators at PHL. They didn't have a great experience last year. And as I said, I definitely do believe they're better than that. So my aim and goal for this year's PHL is and was that we win PHL, because I do believe that the Gladiators have the personnel to do that. And what would be nice would probably be playing the Dragons in the final. That would make me really happy.
All right, Sigs. Obviously, in these... sorry.
I have to edit there. I don't know where this audio clip is.
Okay. Are you still looking for it, Derek?
Yeah, I am. And it's weird. I mean, I went to the exact date. I mean, we're chatting to each other nonstop. Now, I've got the exact date here. It was the 14th of June... 2019. Oh, wait a minute. I think I might be able to find it.
Let's have in the other group.
Was it?
I think it was in the Raider group.
Oh, okay. Let's see. 14th of June. Sorry, Sigs. You got to listen to it. It's worth a... Actually, it could very well be. There we go.
Yeah.
Okay. 14th of June. Where is this thing?
Yeah, if it takes me back to that moment, then I'm more than willing to hear it out.
No, it was a beaut. It really was an incredible moment. And, I mean, just in terms of Olympics, while we do that, I mean, a postponement from a year. We chatted to Gareth Ewing regarding it. I mean, he says, like, if anything, you know, it obviously does help with preparations for that. But, I mean, it must be disappointing on one end, the fact that we've got to wait another whole year. But on another, I mean, yeah, it just means an extra year, like he said, to get better.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. And Gareth has been driving that with the senior team a lot. And I couldn't agree with him more on that approach. You know, for us, we normally are limited with contact time as a squad. That's one thing we definitely believe we don't get enough of. So the extension can only mean one thing. It can only mean that we have more opportunity to, as exactly as he said, an extra 12 months to prepare better towards 2021. So that's definitely the approach that we've adopted for the mindset and being positive about it. But yeah, on the other side, you obviously can't ignore that right now would be, you know, the start of it all. And everyone had built up over the last 3-4 years to this moment. So the disappointment is there. But I think, Gareth has been really good with the players in terms of just reassuring them that, everyone is still part of the process. Nothing changes with the whole timeline. So the players, I think, are still very motivated to work towards that. It just really is what it is as a scenario. But of course, disappointing, but I do believe that we're definitely not going to lose anyone over the next 12 months. So I'm very confident that all we can take out of this is just the extended contact time that we can potentially get together as a squad a bit more often before June, July next year.
Okay, so the reason why South Africa will be participating at the World Cup has a lot to do with how they did over in India with that matchup against the USA. Yeah. Managed to find the clip. Okay, first and foremost, myself and Ty were conversing with each other nonstop on WhatsApp. As soon as that goal went in from Spooner, I sent this to him.
Ash! Come on!
And then that was a load of nonsense, and then Tyron summed it up a bit better.
Come on! Yes, man!
What a wonderful...
That was the feeling. That was the feeling.
So tell us, honestly, the celebrations that evening. How did they go?
Derek, we still had a final to play. That was only a semi-final, eh? So we were still mid-tournament. But that's another thing. I think, I've been part of the senior team now for the last, I'd say... Yeah, 2 years probably, exactly 2 years. And the one aspect that under Gareth now and the leadership group, the environment is very, very, not calmer, but more open and we're just trying to enjoy the journey and everyone and the space around us. And yeah, we still had a final to play, but we definitely had to enjoy that moment. So, and that really started from the change room before we got back onto the bus, back to the hotel. We had a good, we've been lucky. We've been able to stay at the same hotel, during the World Cup in 2018. And then we were back there again, obviously mid 2019. So the staff at the hotel, Mr. Priya, the hotel manager, it honestly became a home away from home. So by the time we get back to the hotel, there's a massive party or crew waiting for us to celebrate in our success. Very different, of course, to our experience in 2018. So I think the whole hotel staff were more happy for us that we finally were able to come back to the hotel with a win under our belt. So it was an awesome evening, but definitely didn't get out of hand because we still had that final to play against India. But yeah, definitely after the India final, it was different type of celebration.
Which is very, very un-hockey of us, hey? Behaving well on Twitter. Sigs, obviously, across all the hockey, the podcast interviews, we do have the one question quiz. And the one question is either related to your name, your career, or something significant in your life, or alternatively, nothing significant at all. Completely irrelevant. But I thought, what better place? You've been a massive role model to him. He spoke very highly of you. So I'd like to know, Billy Ntuli scored his first international goal against which country?
I'm going to say it would have... I think I can go with the venue first, and that will hopefully, allow me to the team. His breakthrough and his debut series would have been in Cape Town, at a summer series in Cape Town. I'm just going to go with it and say he scored against Belgium in Cape Town.
So, his first series, he did make his breakthrough against his debut came in 2016 as a IT against Ireland and Spain, but he didn't get a goal there.
Okay.
He then played two brief appearances against Germany, but did not get a goal. He was then the top goal scorer at the under-21 African Cup.
Yeah.
That doesn't count. And then he played in another summer series in Cape Town, playing 4 of the 6 games.
And Spain?
He played against Netherlands, and then he played against Belgium and scored his first goal against Belgium.
So I'm right.
You are correct.
I got the wrong series, yeah, but I got the team.
You did. You get it right. You win yourself a Hockey the Podcast virtual cap. You can put it on whenever you feel like it.
We'll make a plan for that. Fantastic. I'm just stoked I got it right. I wouldn't have heard the last of that one.
No, that's superb. Well done. We keep on speaking about how our few succeed. And, you're one of the few. I think we've had a fairly poor success rate of late, eh, Ty?
No, very poor success rate of late, although, we have had queries into the quality of our questions. So I think we've been making them really hard because of the lockdown sports quiz that we do.
Listen, there's absolutely nothing wrong with your questions. I think Oak is just making excuses.
well, sickly, the other thing that why, if you do succeed in getting it right, we actually do have a prize. You get an immediate invite into the lockdown sports quiz. So I don't know if you've seen or heard of it. Okay. We've been hosting it every Tuesday evening. And... Okay. We've had the creme de la creme of the hockey world involved. We've had sportsmen and women from around the globe from various different sports taking part. It's the place to be on a Tuesday night. So we would love to have you involved in a future Tuesday night event. Would you be keen?
Absolutely, guys. I back my sports trivia 100%. That would be awesome. I'd love that.
Oh, well, there we go. Done. Well, there. No virtual cap for you. It's a virtual invite for a physical event.
Invite. Fantastic. Thanks, Derek.
Zickler, thank you so much, man. It's been so great having you on.
Absolute pleasure, guys. Thank you. Thanks for... I think if I look at my time here, just under an hour. I was holding you down to those 4 hours you promised me, Derek. But
This is just the end of the first quarter.
That's the introduction, Dan.
Yeah.
First chucker out the way.
Exactly.
No, guys, honestly... Thanks for having me. Really, really appreciate it. Awesome hour sharing and just reliving some of those memories.
Oh, lovely. And may your career go from strength to strength. It already has in many, many ways, but we know for absolute fact that there's plenty more to come from Sikle Ntuli.
Thanks, guys. Awesome.
Cool. Cheers, Sikle. Bye.
Bye.
So, goodbye to another great guest there, Ty.
Yeah, we're on to episode, can you believe that, 46, guest number 55. I mean, it's frankly ridiculous, but it's bloody wonderful.
Yeah, it really is. It's frankly ridiculous that you know those numbers. I mean, not the episodes, that's pretty easy to work out, but to actually have a running count of how many guests that we've had, because in certain episodes we've had more than one guest, and that's exactly how it's turned out to be. You've got a spreadsheet about all this, eh, Ty?
Let's say that.
It's the one inside your head. It's the one in his head. For those that don't know, well, actually, everyone knows, but Ty is a mathematical genius. Please tell us once again your TV debut back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day, before I ever got to appear on Sunrise on ETV, I was on A Word or Two with good old Jeremy Mansfield and William Smith. And just to fully understand the level of nerd that I am and was, I was very, very excited to meet William Smith. I was just disappointed that he didn't have Smarties with him, because if you remember correctly, we used to watch on TV with the Smarties.
The learning channel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was a little bit of a broken illusion. There was no Smarties. He just did the maths on a piece of paper. But it was such a cool experience, and one that I get to talk about a little bit more often than I ever thought I would.
And how old were you?
I was about 13.
Jeez, amazing. And you went all the way to the final?
No. I lost. I was winning. I won an episode, and on my second episode, which left me one short of the knockout, I lost a lady on the conundrum, which a lot of people haven't let me forget, is because the conundrum was years and years of cricket, and my answer was centuries.
Yeah.
As they turned the conundrum, she was like, stop, and got it. And I think I'd been like eight points ahead, and she got it, and she went through, and she ended up winning the whole season, so at least it was okay. But yeah, it was a very cool experience at that point in my life.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, a word or two's loss is definitely Hockey the Podcast's gain. No question of telling where you would have gone into there. Maybe you would have ended up being the next William Smith and hosted the show. So we're glad to rather have you here than not there. But Ty, it's been great as always, and what a guest. So thoroughly impressed by Sekle. And yeah, I think your next challenge is to find a guest who hasn't been related to any of our previous guests.
Ah, that's very possible. Because I actually chatted with next week's guest today.
Oh, done. So we won't be expecting a fourth right or a third in Thule.
No.
Lovely. Shut tight.
All right.
Cheers.